This is LabCast, insights and ideas for the expansion stage senior manager, hosted by OpenView Labs.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to this episode of LabCast. I'm Brendan Knoyer. Today, we're joined by OpenView Venture Partners founder Scott Maxwell and Oren Michaels, CEO of Mashery, a leading API management provider. In today's episode, Scott asks Oren about some of his best and most proven strategies for building great companies. Here's Scott and Oren.
Hey, Oren, thanks for coming in.
Good to be here, Scott.
So I was thinking that maybe we would spend a little bit of time today talking about your experiences and philosophies and thoughts associated with company building. Does that sound all right?
Sounds great. Love building companies.
So take me back to like the beginning of either your current company, Mashery, or any company, and mm-hmm. how you think about assembling the founding team, and how do you get started?
Well, a couple things. First of all, any founding team, in my experience, needs to have three distinct roles, which should be three distinct people involved. You have a commercial person who decides how you're going to sell what you're doing. You have a technical person who decides how you're going to build it. You have a product person who decides what you're going to build. And these roles are by necessity in conflict with each other. If one is out of balance, bad things happen, and you can sort of look at companies and see, you know, what happens there. So starting with that, and you know, what you don't want to do is start with three product people. But starting with that concept, so if you have a group of people who are, you know, who trust each other and love to work together, and can fulfill those roles, and I think fulfill those roles also without really getting in each other's way, in the sense that the technical person shouldn't also be moonlighting, trying to make the product person's decisions and vice versa. You know, you really need to have people focus on what's important, because if you had time for everybody to go do everything, you wouldn't need more than one person. So you start with that founding team. And usually the CEO is the commercial person, but not always. Often it's a product person. But as the founding CEO, you really only have one privilege, and that's you get to decide who you hire next. And so my experience has been on day one, you start the company, and you have the entire pie. And on day two, when you bring in your first co-founder, you've cut that pie in half, and you decide which stuff you hate doing or that you suck at, and you give that away. In my case, it's, you know, a lot of the HR stuff, and my co-founder Kirsten Spaljarek has been someone I've worked with for many years on that, and it's, you know, that's pretty obvious. It's like I don't, you know, want to do anything that she's not involved in. And you go from there, and you begin dividing yourself in half. We had a great technical co-founder in Clay Loveless, and then very quickly hired our first outside, you know, non-founder but fairly early executive, who was someone on the product side, because that was the area we needed the expertise in. So you move along that way, and then you start building the team. And under about 10 to 15 people, I would tend to hire great, really smart, capable people who maybe, you know, I would have a job description in mind. They might not be absolutely perfect for that, but they're smart, and they'll work hard, and they believe and they want to get it done. And you sort of hire great people and fill in the roles more than you hire the person whose resume exactly matches that role. And that works till about, you know, 10, 15 people, and then you sort of have to move in the opposite direction. You really have to hire people to do the roles you need, and you're sort of turning into a more, you know, professionally organized company that way.
And how do you decide what, when you get to the 15, 20 person point, what roles do you need most? Is it kind of what keeps you up in the middle of the night?
That's partly, it's who's burning out. It's where are your, you know, your single points of failure, particularly, you know, we're in an enterprise software game essentially. So, we have a lot of big customers. Even by then we started having a bunch of big customers, and there were things that if X person was asleep or on an airplane or whatever, that the world would screech to a halt until that person was available. Those are places you really want to start making sure you have some depth in. And then you also look, of course, at the things that aren't getting done, that get more and more annoying because they're not getting done, that you yourself can't do or don't want to do, and you hire in those areas. You know, mm-hmm. it's really what's going to advance the company. And for me, it's at that stage, it's pretty tactical. It's you know, it's whack-a-mole. It's getting things done that need to get done, and then more stuff pops up.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think about? Do you hire once you get to the point where you start hiring more specialized people? Do you mm-hmm. hire senior level, let them fill in their teams, hire.
That's certainly my preference. Mid-level. Yeah, no, it's my preference to bring in people who are strong. They're executives, but also will do this stuff until such time as, you know, they then start with their pie and begin dividing it in half, right? So you get someone who's a great executive, and they decide which parts of their world they want to split off and have different people do, and what they think they're good at and what they think they're not, and they're running their organization at that point. So hopefully they're better at it than I am. If I'm going to bring in, for instance, a VP of product, and I've already hired all the product managers, that would presume that I think I'm better at running product than whoever I'm hiring for, as a VP, and then there's really little point in hiring that person.
Right, right. So we run into a lot of companies that have formed that don't have product broken out from engineering.
Yeah, that's a problem.
And I suspect there's a lot of people who will listen to this discussion and
roll
have
their
that
eyes.
Situation.
Yeah.
Do you? I'm sure you run into it as well when you because you.
Well, I started with it, right. I hired a VP of product fairly early on, and I told him, I said, I don't actually know what a product manager does. I really had not been in an organization with well-run product before, and while running Mastery, I've learned, you know, what a great product manager, product management team, product function is, and ultimately. You know, the product person is deciding what gets built and in what order and what the priorities are and how it's going to look. And when that is run purely as a technical exercise, you often run into a situation where either the technical co-founder is trying to solve a problem they've had in the way they like it done, which may or may not be what the market is, because many technical co-founders have pretty strong opinions, or they optimize for improving things, making things more elegant, not getting something ready to launch, which as the commercial guy is infuriating, right? It's very frustrating to believe you're ready to sell something and your technical person is, you know, sitting there, they're futzing with details that don't matter. Mm-hmm. So someone has to, you know, prioritize and has to own that. And it's a very hard thing for the technical people to give up, because many times a technical person and a commercial person together will start a company to solve a problem that they had, which is actually what happened with Mastery. I had an API management problem, and I couldn't find a way to solve it, so I started a company. And my technical co-founder was the engineer who had that problem with me at our previous company. Mm-hmm. But we learned pretty quickly that we are not the only target market out there, and if we limit that to ourselves, we're not going to have a very successful company. So we brought people in who had broader experience in selling to these kinds of markets.
Right. So you also, you have a pretty unique situation with Kirsten as co-founder and what she brings to the table now.
Sure.
as you grow and the a lot of CEOs, as you get companies that get larger and larger, end up with starting to get consumed with more management activity than outside activity or internal kind of trying to solve meaningful problems.
Right.
What, can you just talk to that?
Well, you know, first of all, it is interesting the situation I have with Kirsten, because she complements strengths and weaknesses that I have. And I remember when we started Mastery and, you know, we had a couple of people who looked at investing and they thought it was a little unusual. You know, what do you have an HR person for when you have, you know, fewer than 8 people in your company? And I would say, well, you know, I find that having, you know, her on the team makes it a better place for everyone and allows me to recruit and build a better team. And some would say, well, isn't that the CEO's job? And I would say, well, the CEO's job is to do what they're good at and delegate what they're not. And you can pretend that you should be good at that, but when you have someone who's better at it than you, then the CEO can go do things that the CEO's good at. So, you know, I would probably be stronger on the financial side, on the legal side, things like that, because I'm not spending my time doing that. As the company grows, it becomes a lot about culture and a lot about fit. And when you're hiring people and when you're retaining people, a great person in that function anticipates things. So you don't end up blindsided by people who are, you know, suddenly unhappy with something or not being compensated correctly or whatever it is, because someone who's really good in that position has anticipated it, has already, you know, come to me and said, hey, we have to reassess this comp, or we have to give this person some time off, or, you know, we have to bring in some assistance in this area, because although they're never going to tell you that they're underwater, and we're going to, you know, they're going to burn out if we're not careful. And and being, you know, understanding that and managing ahead of it is what a great HR person does.
Right. Would you recommend a HR person to emerging growth companies, or do you think your situation is...
Oh, absolutely. I think I not only would I recommend it, I would say that people too often look at HR as, you know, there are a few functions that they'll separate out. It's like, well, we don't really need benefits management, so we'll use, you know, TriNet or someone like that. Well, you know, fine when you're tiny, but it doesn't scale well, right? We don't, you know, we'll use outside recruiters. Well, actually, someone has to manage the outside recruiter. Someone who, you know, the outside recruiters don't hire for culture. They're an extension of what your great HR person does, but they're not, you know, we have a terrific outside recruiter, contract recruiter we use, and she's been terrific, but and found a lot of great people, and in some ways is, you know, is able to recruit positions and has been that we were having trouble with before she was working with us. But that doesn't mean that she understands the culture the way that a founding HR person does. So I think that once you're past, I mean, maybe we were early in that I, you know, Kirsten's an actual co-founder, but you know, once you got double digit number of employees and you're, and especially if you're trying to hire, you hire a whole lot better when you have someone who's focused on that.
Right. Oh, that's good feedback. And what about the finance function, which is another one that kind of people tend
to... Again, you play to your strengths and you see what the issues are. So, you know, we have over 100 customers. Most of our customers pay us annually in advance, or in some cases, the older customers are paying us quarterly. So, you know, we have payroll that's largely handled by Kirsten and automated. I sign checks once a month, maybe twice. Mm-hmm. Finance is not that tough of a function for us. So... Mm-hmm. We've done it with an outside person. We have an internal full-time accountant doing controller and paperwork stuff. But when it comes to the CFO issues, historically we've done it with a great person who came in one day a month and closed and did stuff. But I was doing financial projections. I was doing modeling. I was raising the money. I was doing the reporting. Because I knew how to do that. And it's, again, you look at your strengths, and I would prefer to put those dollars into places where I didn't have the time and the strength to do it. Now we're bigger. We have, bigger and more sophisticated investors, bigger and more sophisticated customers. We actually have big customers who are, want to make sure that we're managing that way. We're going to start doing audited financial statements. And so now we're up to, about a 20, our outside CPA is about a 20% commitment now. She's in at least once a week. And we now have two people, a full-time and a part-time in the accounting department. And that's about what we need. But it depends on the company. Companies that have large volumes of financial transactions, companies that have significant regulatory issues, companies that have a lot of cross-border stuff, it's going to be very different. It's the same thing. It's kind of like NetOps. If everything's in the cloud and you never have servers to rack, you might not need a sysadmin for a while. If you got a bunch of hardware in a cage, you're going to need a sysadmin. Right. So it really depends on the company.
In our case, we had
a more simple version of it just by virtue of the fact that we had fewer customers with higher dollar amounts purchased.
Great. So looking forward 3, 4, 5 years, how many people do you think you'll have?
Well, we're at about 70 some odd now, and we're it's about double of where we were last year. Mm-hmm. I would say 3, 4 years out, hundreds, but probably not thousands.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming in. It's
thanks
great
for
talking
me.
To you.
Likewise.
Really appreciate your ideas.
Anytime.
All right.
Thanks for everything.
Talk to you.
Bye.